Kronbom.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford Eryou.
We are your TV BFFs, and this is an interview podcast about the TV shows that people love most. Each episode, we bring on a guest to discuss their top six shows of all time based on what we call the BFF criteria. With so much TV out there, we want to know, what are the best shows you've ever seen? What are your absolute favorite shows? And what are the shows you would watch on an infinite loop forever?
That's right. So each episode, our guests will pick two shows in each of the three BFF categories, those being their best, favorite, and forever shows. And they're going to choose from three genres of TV: drama, comedy, and all things unscripted. And if you want to know our BFF criteria picks, then stay tuned because that episode is coming up very soon. So definitely subscribe if you haven't already so you don't miss that.
Yes. And in the meantime, you can also check out our very first episode, if you haven't already, where Brandi and I talk about why we created this show, and we get into a whole bunch of TV shows that almost made our BFF criteria. But now let's bring on our very first guest ever to the TV BFFs podcast. She's the host of Reality Check on People TV. She co-hosts two incredible podcasts, Scissoring Isn't a Thing and Shaken and Disturbed. She's also Andy Cohen's assistant and a good friend. Please welcome Darren Karp. Hey, Darren. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here. You guys can't see me at home, but I just did air guns to Brandi and Dan. So this is going to be a good episode.
Absolutely.
So glad you're here.
So, Darren.
Yeah, I almost don't want to even do this. I'm just up top. This was the hardest homework assignment I've ever had.
That was my question. So
hate you both.
Putting your criteria together, you know, we have a shared history of working in television together, developing TV shows together. I know a couple of the shows where you might be leaning. I don't want to reveal or bring anything up, but tell us a little bit about your experience putting this together. And then what we're going to do is, before we get to your six, I want to talk about some of the shows that almost made your list as a way to kind of get into your personal TV history. So We'll talk about the ones that maybe weren't your BFFs, but were close friends. But overall, how did you find narrowing this list of all the shows that you've watched in your lifetime?
Well, you know, I'm sure your audience might not know me as personally as maybe both of you guys do, but TV is my life and I watch a lot of it. And part of my job really is, in fact, most of my job is to watch television. So it's kind of this hobby turned profession, you know, turned passion. I was super stoked when you told me this. First off, I kind of love homework. I'm a nerd anyway. So I love a task, and like getting to do this task about my favorite thing, I was stoked about, because it's like, ooh, criteria and this and that. Like, I love it. Let me see where I'm at. Mind goes. But then as I actually started like having my list of ones that, you know, I'm going to say, and Dan, we can, when we get to it, I know what, you know, I'm going to say is one of them.
Right.
This is my favorite show of all time. It was like, where category do I put that in? And I found that the hardest category to put things in was best for me, because best, it could be a show that I didn't necessarily am obsessed with, but I just think is so well done technically. But I'm not passionate about stuff that I'm not obsessed with. So I decided to take the best and put it as like shows that I think that are my favorite that were done the best, technically the best. And I will say, for me, and I know that you and I had sort of discussed that, people previously on a couple, you know, when you had talked about it, like people will just look up like, I love HBO. Let me see all the HBO shows that have come out in the past 20 years, because maybe I can't remember a show off the top of my tongue. But part of the television experience for me is being able to remember and not look up. If I have to remember and I have to look it up, that ruins the experience for me, because Even though it's a great show, and even though it's been 20 years, it has to make a stamp in me. If I don't remember it, it doesn't matter to me then.
I really appreciate that clarification.
Thank you.
I love that. Like, if you watch the show and you can't remember it, did you actually watch the show?
Yeah. Did it actually really matter? And sometimes, you know, because we're watching TV with friends, or you're maybe imbibing on whatever, depending on where you live. Sometimes the show is just great in that moment and you absolutely love it. But like, in 3 years, am I going to remember that plot line? No. Do I want to rewatch it? No. And So for me, my criteria is very specific. And so I didn't look up anything anything outside of what was in my head already.
Okay. So Before we get to that specific criteria, we mentioned best favorite in forever. You'll pick two shows in each of those categories. What were some of the shows that just missed out?
In my best category, I had Band of Brothers, which was an almost, because when Band of Brothers came out, which I can't even remember what year, I was young enough to maybe like not understand all the war references or maybe how specific it was, but old enough to really let it sink in what a production it was. And still to this day, I view that series at such high regard. You know, I can kind of talk about Easy Company having only watched it once. And so Band of Brothers for me was like, that was a great fucking show. That was just a great show.
That was a very high watermark.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. And when I tell you what I chose as my best, you two are going to be like, what?
Yeah. I mean, you don't hear many people talk about Band of Brothers much anymore, but like it was a like very high production value war drama. Kind of in the wake of like that Saving Private Ryan area where like those were fucking huge.
Mm-hmm. You know where you do hear about that a lot is when you work at the History Channel. They bring it up a lot. So I was like, what's our Band of Brothers?
Right. Yeah. And I love watching the History Channel. And like, I'm one of the only females that I know that happen to watch the History Channel because it's very male centric. Mm-hmm. So that would make sense. Another that really could have gone in anywhere for me. So this was a show that didn't make any category, but could have made it at all of them is The Wire. Love The Wire. I think it could be a favorite, could be a forever. It's definitely one of the best. Mm-hmm. I think the storyline is not only super fantastic in tackling the drug war from all angles, but the fact that they took actors that were really in the streets and weren't famous before, I think is just awesome. And it was just well done. And I think everyone outside of second season loves The Wire for the most part. I think that's just everyone loves it.
You know what's funny? A good friend of mine having these conversations, he chose The Wire as his best. And he said his favorite season was season two, which speaks to like just the different feel and vibe and thematic kind of approach that show took, which I thought was really cool. And it'll be in the pantheon of like the critically acclaimed, you know, some of the best of.
But like season three or bust, season three or bust.
It could have gone anywhere for me. Like if I had to, like I would not be upset watching The Wire forever. It came very close to the last minute. I changed it actually today. A couple just to be mentioned ones that I wanted to just skirt on. Shark Tank. I love Shark Tank. I could watch that forever. Not only do you learn about cool businesses, but you actually learn a little bit about business language and what makes a good deal and what makes a good product. And that's kind of fascinating. It's a very digestible way to learn about business and marketing in a very unique way. And you get to like think of how easy it could be to be an inventor and also how impossible. I love Oz. I watched that as a kid. That was very close. It's very dark. I love Oz. I mean, it was like, it's Edie Falco's start. It was the first HBO show I ever got into as a kid. The fact that my parents let me watch a show literally about prison and rape when I was seven says something about how I was brought up, but that was right up there. The L word for me being an out woman. I mean, the L word is what binds every lesbian. And I'm sure more than lesbian, but certainly just straight up lesbian that I know. It is the show that binds us, and not particularly well scripted, not particularly well done, just in my heart will always be a good show. And I will always put it at my top 10 list.
That's
so there
awesome.
Were some feel goods in there.
Those are some close ones. And the L word too is a little cross promotion. If you check Darren out on her podcast, Scissoring Isn't a Thing, the L word gets a lot of love.
Thank you.
can get some opinions on that specific show, although it did not make this list.
It didn't. And just before moving on, West Wing, You're the Worst, and Killing Eve, all good ones. West Wing was very close for a lot of them too.
Mm-hmm.
Especially now, it's like an ideal show. It's like,
this is what I want it to be.
Yeah, and like, I'm like, oh, that's what a, you know, deputy communications director does. Like, it also is an interesting lesson in watching what those positions actually do. And in weird sense, it gives you a form of like how many pieces goes into running an office in the government, not even just the president, but like Secretary of State. And I like shows that I can like absorb stuff with. So guys, I mean, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was up there. I don't want to get into it. Family Matters, don't even. Like, let's not even.
Oh my gosh.
I almost mentioned Ren and Stimpy. It was very close.
Ooh, now we're getting some glimpses into Darren's TV history here.
Very close, guys. I'm mad at both of you right now. I'm angry at both of you. But yes, this is what it came down to.
Okay, well, let's get to your TV BFF criteria. So we asked you to pick six shows in total.
Yes.
So there's going to be two shows in each of the three categories. And our categories are best, favorite, and forever. So your best shows are the ones that you think are the most artistic, well executed, or just kind of like the overall best made shows you've ever seen. Your favorite shows are the ones that just hold a place near and dear to your heart, mean something to you personally. So it's very tough to narrow that down to two. I get it. And then the best way to describe your forever category is that if you died tomorrow and in the afterlife, you got to choose two shows to watch in order from pilot to finale over and over for infinity. What are they?
Can I also just say before I start, can I come back on in 6 months when my list is different and new? Just putting it out there just because I'll change everything. But yes, okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. This list is, it's a moment in time, right? Yeah. With so many shows, this isn't a, here's maybe what I'm watching right now. So if you watch a new show and it reaches that level, like you mentioned, like a You're the Worst, more recent, but maybe after time it settles with you and it becomes a favorite, you can add it down the line. That's totally, totally. Fine.
Absolutely.
There are just a couple other points about the criteria. For each category, you're going to choose from the three overall genres of TV, which are drama, comedy, and unscripted. Unscripted meaning everything from reality shows to documentary series. Must be multiple episodes, so no one-off docs, but it can be anything as long as it's not scripted. And also, there's no such thing as guilty pleasure, so if you love it, let's talk about it. And the only other rule is you can, and this is the tricky one, the only other rule is you can't double up on a genre in any category. So if you pick, say, a comedy in your best category, your other pick must either be an unscripted or a drama. And that's where the fun comes in. So let's get into it. Darren, tell us your first show in the best category.
My first show in the best category is going to be Jeopardy. And the reason that I am choosing Jeopardy is because Jeopardy, as a game show fan, and we could argue that Jeopardy is really a quiz show, not a game show, it is the one of the most simplest games that is literally transcending time as we speak. Everyone knows what Jeopardy is. Everybody. You could be 6 years old, you'd be 86 years old. You can watch it with your grandparents. You can watch it with your children. Everyone knows what it is. It is so well executed in literally asking, the answer is the question, which is pretty clever. And also just mind numbing that no one, like, can't believe like Merv Griffin's wife thought of this thing. This is miraculous. And it has stayed course throughout everything. It hasn't changed. It's always been three contestants. I mean, outside of Art Fleming hosting it first and then Alex Trebek taking over, it's timeless, it's well executed, it's quick, and you learn something.
This, okay, great off the jump pick.
Thank
There's
you.
Never been yeah. a pick that feels more Darren. So Darren and I mentioned we develop and create, you know, shows together. Most of those are game shows.
Wait till my second pick, Dan. Just saying.
Gonna say, I've known since I met Darren that she's wanted to be a game show host. So, and this is probably, I think you're right, it, quiz show or game show, it is probably the pantheon, the best trivia game show of all time. It has to be, hands down, right,
hands Brandy? Down. Yeah, I completely agree. It's, and like, and you're right, everybody knows it from a little kid to an old man.
Right.
Everyone knows it. Everybody can play it.
Right. And it's pop culture. Like if you, like when Andy was a Jeopardy question, or like my girlfriend who does Below Deck, like when she was when a part of her work was a Jeopardy question, I screen grabbed it and everyone freaks out. Like who doesn't want to be a Jeopardy question? That's awesome. Yeah. You know, you've made it if you're a Jeopardy question. Mm-hmm.
So Darren, how do you feel? I mean, obviously with the loss of Alex Trebek, how do you feel about the show moving forward? Obviously, it's going to, and it is, but what do you think should be the direction for the next host? Roster of hosts? Is it going to land on Ken Jennings? Should it be someone totally new? What do you think?
I definitely think Ken Jennings could do it. I mean, he sort of has not only like the legacy within it, he's probably the most, or one of the most famous contestants to ever be on Jeopardy. You know, he's not the most winningest of all time, but he's certainly probably the most memorable. So that would make sense in terms of legacy. To be honest with you, my picks when I knew that Alex wasn't going to do this forever, I always thought George Stephanopoulos or Anderson Cooper would be great hosts. They have that news background, but also a little of a pop culture, could kind of talk to the masses type of vibe. I don't think it has to be a man. It just, that's kind of where my head was going. But I certainly think like a Meredith Vieira, Savannah Guthrie, those types of women could handle it for sure. I kind of want to see it to go in direction of like it is an older host's position. I think you need to be a seasoned professional. It's a serious show and it takes itself kind of seriously. And that's what I think has been important throughout it. It's never tried to be silly and I just don't want it to be silly. Like it needs to be what it is.
Yeah, Anderson Cooper's a good call.
Thank you.
That's what I was thinking.
He has the gravitas. He's the silver fox that you kind of want. And also, he's got, you know, he hosted The Mole. he knows how to do a game show.
And he could do the little banter in between, which is arguably the hardest part of being about a host, is like the improv and making things interesting when it's small talk. Anderson's got that. Like, he finds everyone interesting. So that would be my pick.
And he's just got that like that humor.
Right. Right, but
like
he's subtle. Got
that, you know what I mean? Like, right. Yeah, it's like a subtle humor. He's not taking himself too seriously, but taking himself seriously enough.
Exactly. And like men and women love him. You know what I mean? People swoon for him. It would make kind of sense to me for that to happen. But I'm not sure a game show host should also be hosting the presidential debates. Who knows?
I mean, you know more than anyone, everyone is doing everything on all media. Yes, so. Across yes. all platforms yes. these days.
Yes, exactly.
So Jeopardy, strong pick out of the gate. That would qualify as an unscripted pick. Mm-hmm. So you have a comedy or a drama left. What's your next pick for best?
My next one was a pick that actually came to me yesterday when I was really thinking about it. I was like, I thought I had my list. I felt pretty good about it. And I was like, let me just give a once over in my brain about shows. And this show popped into my mind and it warmed my heart. And the reason I'm going to say it's the best is because to me, it goes in the Jeopardy category of being timeless, but it's for adults and for children. And that is Pee-wee's Playhouse. And Pee-wee's Playhouse is of a time, right? Came out probably 30 years ago. We're all in our 30s now. We all remember it. But our parents remember it. And my parents would sit down today with me being at 32 and my parents at 70 and get just as much joy out of it today as we did back then. And if you really think about the artwork being done, you know, we often talk about Andy's show is like him in his office at home having a cocktail with friends. This was the mind of Pee-wee Herman, like of Paul Rubens, creating a character that didn't really have a sexuality. That wasn't part of it. It wasn't political. It wasn't trying to make a statement. It was like an adult show for children in this weird fantasy kind of drug world, but didn't mention drugs. But clearly someone was on LSD when we created Pee-wee's Playhouse. Like that had to have been the case. And it was fun and light. And it was just great and clever and a way to show kids. And Pee-wee's Playhouse makes my second choice for best.
Wow. I'm kind of floored by this pick.
Your mouth switched up and I didn't say it to you in the original list. I was like, I'm leaving it for a wild card and see if I can handle it.
Wow. So I love that. It's funny thinking about this podcast, and this is an oversight on my part. I didn't think of the possibility of people bringing on kid shows.
Yep.
Honestly, for lack of a better, categorization
it's really
of it.
It's an adult show.
It's a kid show. It's an adult show.
Yeah, it's
over time. It's a comedy. I think it's a comedy, you know. But I'll tell you what, it influenced my college sketch comedy show. Yeah. And it's influencing sketch comedy still. It's influencing kid shows still. Mm-hmm. By putting in the best, this is, in your opinion, pound for pound, the best kind of showing that genre, surpassing the Sesame Streets of the world. Brandy, I need you to jump in here with, as the mom here of the group, how do you feel about the kind of...
Yeah, would you show your kids Pee-wee's Playhouse today?
So I'm going to be honest with you guys. I was terrified of Pee-wee Herman, okay? Terrified. It was very hard for me as a kid. I never really got into, I feel like I'm still like this to this day. I never really got into silly. I needed everything to be grounded in reality. And Pee-wee was just,
Brandy?
I was like, he was just too out there. I was like, why is he doing this? Why does he do this? What's happening? So I do think that I actually hadn't thought about showing them Pee-wee, but I should, because my best friend is a magician and Pee-wee Herman is like his idol. And he like he does like this kid. He's trying to do like this kid show, like kind of on YouTube. And he's like a pretty successful children's magician in Southern California. And he just takes so much influence from Pee-wee Herman, and Yuli loves him. So I think that she would really like it. I see why kids get so into him, because he's just, I mean, he's really fun and it's really fun to watch.
Yeah.
It's just that I used to hate watching anything where people were like dirty too. Like my parents love like Married with Children. And I was like, their house is like really poor. I don't know. Like, so I never got into like Married with Children. Like,
Brandy,
Rosie.
Shit.
Brandy wants some aspirational content.
I mean, God, Pee-wee had zombie. He had singing sunflowers in the window. And you're talking to me about dirt in the house? He had cherry. Oh my God, Brandy, Lord. You know,
but yeah. I do love that pick. Like, and I kind of want to see what Yuli would take from Pee Wee Herman, because I feel like she's four. Mm. So it's kind of like the perfect age to start kind of paying attention to stuff like that. And like, I also hate every single show she watches. I don't know if you guys know what Cocomelon is, but ruins my life every day.
It sounds intellectually stimulating though for a mother. Cocomelon sounds great. But and I don't know, because obviously we weren't parents back then, but I do sort of feel like children's shows have taken this shift from when we were kids to maybe when the kids are kids these days. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not as intellectual as I felt like they were as kids. Like, I definitely felt like my parents could watch along the shows Ren and Stimpy, Rocko's Modern Life, even Rugrats, Pee Wee Herman when I was a kid. And now when I look at children's programming, I'm like, kids are watching this? Even Blue's Clues had something more to me than what's out there now. And you'd think that would be different. Do you find that to be the case as a mom?
You know, I feel like Sesame Street comes correct with a little something for the parents and for the kids. Mm-hmm. But with the other shows, I don't see it. Like, Yuli just, she kind of finds her own thing on Netflix. Like, she's got like the kids, she's got a kid's profile, so she can't like find everything. But like, the stuff that she chooses to watch is just mind-blowingly awful. Like, literally, Cocomelon is like really shitty computer animation. It sounds like somebody put like, they did like English translate. They're like, translate this into English and make a song. It's like, that's not a song. That's not a song. Just because you put it with the melody that kind of sounds like Old MacDonald, not a song. Yeah. This is not real.
That is,
you know what I like to say? Funny. Like, with all like the Disney Plus of it all, right? Marvel has series, Star Wars has series. Let's get some Pixar series. Pixar knows how to, you know, entertain the kids.
They have a lot of shorts, but I haven't seen any series.
I want a half hour weekly series from Pixar. I would watch that. I don't care what it is, especially if it's like the team that's doing like, you know, Soul and Inside Out and mm-hmm. like, you know, those heavy hitters. Give it to me.
You make a good point, because I do think that the kids movies these days, when I think about what's very imaginative, it's all very animated. But Pee Wee back in the day was exactly that without actually in real life. And to actually think of what he accomplished IRL and how everything could be your friend, a chair, a robot, a genie, mm-hmm. a flower, the mailwoman, you know, even as we're talking about it now, like, it's really hyping me up about my choice, because I'm like, he really was a pioneer, and no one has really created another genre exactly like that type of variety show. I mean, he had comic interstitials, if you remember. He had tons of different characters. Mm-hmm. It was just, it's a great, great show. You've reaffirmed my choice, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, it's a great choice.
So those are my best.
So moving on to your favorite shows in the second category here, what is your first favorite show pick?
All right. Dan, what did you think I put in my favorite category?
So if this show wasn't in your best, it might be in your forever, but I feel like this is where Seinfeld enters the conversation.
Seinfeld is my first favorite, of course. Seinfeld was going to make it. Like,
had to.
That is my favorite show of all time. And that's the thing too, is like, it's one of the only comedies I can say that about, but Seinfeld to me is the perfect show. I mean, truth of the matter is, it's definitely one of my best, although, you know, technically there are some like things that I think are wrong with it, that things could have been solved. It's very Larry David, where you're kind of like,
yeah,
you don't have to get into these problems, Larry. You know, there's just certain things. But it could have been a forever show. And I've seen Seinfeld front to back thousands of times. I could quote almost every episode, and I know everything about it. It is my favorite. It brings me so much joy. It kind of shaped my humor when I was a kid. You know, both my parents grew up in New York. I grew up very culturally Jewish, not religiously. So there's all of that mixed into it. It felt very familial to me, and something that I could very much so relate to. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus is like greatest woman of all time.
Yes. Touch on your love and almost interactions with JLD over the last couple of years.
Well,
What started as, I'm sure, you know, with Seinfeld has grown into, I'm not going to call it an obsession for you, but is it close?
It's up there. Like, if I were to get a tattoo, it'd probably be like of either like a book that was my favorite or a Seinfeld quote. That's like how up there it is. I'm going to like,
what would the quote be?
Oh my God. They're so so many. It could have been, it could be yada yada. Like there's
I'm just gonna say a yada yada yada.
Yada yada yada. you know, like, you know, there's the marine biologist episode, which is my absolute favorite. There's the mango, which is good. There's Spongeworthy. I'm not sure my parents would ever forgive me if I got Spongeworthy tattooed on my body, especially as a gay woman. But you know what? That's me. I'm willing to fuck shit up. But JLD, Julie Louis-Dreyfus, has been, outside of Lucille Ball, and I Love Lucy, made it almost into my forever category, which I know we're going to get to, has been a huge inspiration for me. I've wanted to meet her so many times. Years ago, my girlfriend, ex now, but my girlfriend back then, for my first birthday, had traded, because she was in the music industry, traded something, like reached out to her team, traded some music stuff, so that way JLD could sign something personally for me. So I have her headshot signed to me for my birthday in my room, along with my favorite game show host. She's like up there with me. And then I went to go see Phoebe Waller-Bridge's Fleabag, and I saw the live performance of it at Soho Playhouse two summers ago. And Soho Playhouse is like 100 people in the theater, you know, very intimate, very small. And I'm sitting there, my friend took me for her birthday, and I'm sitting there on the aisle, and I was like, I know that head of hair. Like five rows away, I was like, I know that head of hair. Like in such a stalker way. And she turns, and it was Julie Louis-Dreyfus sitting right there. And my friend Alana was like, go up and talk to her. I was like, what am I going to say? Like, I'm your biggest fan. Like, no, if I'm going to have my moment, I was like, it has to be the right moment. And in theory, where I work, it could happen. And I don't want to be just another fan. I want to be Darren when I meet her. I want to have a purpose. Yeah. So I didn't say anything. I just stared at her and like drooled from afar. And then last year before COVID lockdown on February 12th, I'll never forget it because I was doing a live show in DC right before I was taking the train to DC for my podcast. Andy, she had just come out with a movie with Will Ferrell, something about snow, something I'm, you know what I mean? Like
Downhill.
Yeah.
She just come out with a Downhill, and Andy was doing a Sirius town hall, and Sirius is right across from 30 Rock. And Will Ferrell and JLD were going to be in person. And he knows that I was like obsessed. And he's like, do you want to like come? Like come sit in the front, like ask her a question. I was like, hell yeah, I want to come. So I changed my train and like made it a little bit late to my recording. And I was like, I have to meet her. And got to ask a question. I asked something about like Jerry behind, like, was he actually funny, like behind the scenes, or was it, you know? And then afterwards, Andy was like, come take a picture. Like, Julia, this is my assistant, Darren. And I was like, hi. And and I was standing in the picture, and it was me, Will Ferrell, and JLD. And I turned to Will and I go, do you mind if I switch with you so I could be next to JLD? And he laughed. And he was like, no, I figured you wanted to be like, go ahead. And Julia was like, what the fuck? And I took a picture, and I was like, I knew when I met her, I would be important. And like, it was my favorite picture of all time. Still is. Probably was not memorable for her, but definitely memorable for me. So she holds a place in my heart.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a capstone moment.
Yes.
Yeah. To pair with your favorite show of all time. I love that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I just got to meet Jason Alexander and Michael Richards, and then I'll, Jason Alexander will probably be easier than Michael Richards, but then I'll have met all four because I met Jerry a few times. So.
Did you meet Jerry when he was doing the marriage ref back when we were pages? Is that when you met him?
No, I actually met him with Andy because Andy's a good friend of his, and he was interviewing him, and Andy let me be his one guest to come like see him in this like 3-person audience. So I got to like meet Jerry. Then Jerry came on Watch It Happens Live, and I met him there too. And I forgot all about the marriage ref, by the way.
I know.
Talk
right?
about a show that did not make it any category today on my list.
It didn't make a full season, let alone anyone's criteria. Are you kidding?
Oh my God. Well, I love Seinfeld. I am also a huge fan. Last question for you, Darren. Like, what is your favorite episode of Seinfeld? Because I have two favorite episodes.
Yeah.
And I don't know the names of either of them. But the first one is the one where Jerry had on the big glasses.
Like the Coke bottle ones?
The gum.
Oh.
The Coke bottle glasses and with the gum with Lloyd Braun. Yeah,
with Lloyd Braun, and then he's like hitting on Elaine and she mousses.
And hitting on Elaine and her button is down.
That one, I think it's called the gum. Okay. I think it is. And then, yeah, and what's your other one?
My other favorite one is when Elaine was doing dirty talk and it ends with, or Jerry was doing dirty talk and didn't want Elaine to find out what he said. And in the end, she's like, oh, those are the panties that your mother laid out?
And she's like, That's a great one. I love that one. You know, it's hard.
And the John Cheever diaries.
The letters or whatever from him. I think the marine biologist is up there for me, honestly. Like,
it's a good one.
It's a great one. The Fusilli Jerry is pretty funny, as is the Mango. But I really love them all. Like when George isn't having sex and he becomes like the really smart version of himself.
What is tungsten or wolfram?
We were looking for what is tungsten or wolfram.
Is this a repeat? No. Just lately I've been thinking a lot clearer. Like this afternoon with his chicken Kiev. I really enjoyed watching a documentary with Louise.
Louise, that's what's doing it. You're no longer preoccupied with sex, so your mind is able to focus.
You think?
Yeah.
And George is like teaching Derek Jeter and Bernie Williams how to swing. And it's like they're in Yankee Stadium and George like hits it out.
Hitting is not about muscle. It's simple physics. Calculate the velocity V in relation to the trajectory T, in which G, gravity, of course, remains a constant. It's not complicated.
Now, who are you again?
George Costanza, assistant to the traveling secretary.
Are you the guy who put us in that Ramada in Milwaukee?
You want to talk about hotels? Or you want to win some ball games?
Hey, we won the World Series.
In six games.
And I'm like, George Costanza telling Derek Jeter how to swing a bat. Nothing gets better than this. So all good episodes. But it's so good. It's hard to pick my favorite. They're my babies.
And it was really nice. My brother actually, it was like maybe like last year, he like called. He was like, hey, Brian, I just want you to know that like I made fun of you and your friends for always watching Seinfeld when you were in high school. But like, it's a really good show.
Yeah, and you're like,
I've been watching it.
You're like, bitch, I told you. Like, you're so
no shit.
Yeah, right. You're like,
it's really funny.
It only won like 900 Emmys. It's fine. Yeah. What does that mean?
Now, Darren, you're a Curb person. Do you think that'll ever eclipse Seinfeld for you?
It won't, because it's not like, it's great. And like, arguably, it's probably a harder show to do. But the fearsome foursome that's in Seinfeld, like, to me, it's a little bit more clever of how it all like wraps together. Because Larry David, mm-hmm. as much as I love Curb, sometimes annoys me. Or I'm like, you don't need to do, like, you're doing this again just to fucking.
I mean, that's the thing. The whole show, it's a whole show of George energy.
Well, right. Like, Larry and George maybe purposely get in trouble, whereas like the Gang of Four accidentally gets in trouble. And you know, I mean, it's funny because Nadine, my girlfriend's Iranian, and she was showing me her 23andMe, and her family's from like the island of Caucasus. So she was like, I'm more white than you, dude. Like I'm from like literally Caucasia. And I was like, yeah, you're whiter than me. And I was like, great. Now I'm not in an interracial relationship. Great. Like, this isn't interesting anymore. And there's a Seinfeld episode where Elaine's dating a guy she thinks is like black or half black, you know, and then they realize they're both white. And he's like, so we're just a bunch of white people. And he's like, I don't think we should be talking about this. This isn't interesting anymore. And I quote it all the time. I'm like, so we're just a bunch of white people. Like this is so bad, but it's edgy and funny. And it, you know, for a 90s show, it was good. It was ahead of its time, but I don't think Curb could ever surpass it for me, but close.
Although how excited were you with that? The crossover season, the Seinfeld season. That was cool.
That was a great season of Curb. That was great.
That may have been my favorite season of Curb.
Last season had some good ones, like Latte Larry's with the female bathrooms when you're sitting like this. Like,
yeah.
That killed me. It's like, women don't like to sit like this. And I was like, this is perfect male brain doing things for women that they, it's like, it was so good. But yeah.
It's one of my favorite shows.
It's a feel good show. And I can put it on at any time. It could always be on and I will always turn it on. I'm never not in the mood to watch it, no matter what episode it is. Like, yeah, it's great.
Great pick. I love it. What's your second favorite show?
Second favorite pick. This was tough, but my second favorite pick is going to be The Sopranos. Another great HBO show. I'm from New Jersey. This came out when HBO was like, 9 o'clock on Sunday, if you weren't watching HBO, everyone was talking about The Sopranos at the, like, I felt like the water cooler. Like, still people talk about the finale. I've watched it several times over repeatedly. It is a fantastic show. It has breaths of comedy, but obviously very serious, very dark, just an all around, I think, perfect scripted show that I'm putting in my favorites of all time.
I still have never seen all of The Sopranos. Seen episodes here and there.
What are we doing? What are we doing with our lives? You have kids? Like, why do you have kids? Like, what the hell? Like,
guys,
what are you doing?
Darren, you're going to hate this. I also haven't seen The Sopranos.
What podcast is this? I had one Mick Ultra and I'm like in a different world. Am I in Pee-wee's Playhouse?
Listen,
where the fuck am I?
I think this actually speaks to why this podcast exists. There's so much TV. No one can watch all of it. So we rely on people that we trust to give us these recommendations.
Yeah, and it's not TV, it's HBO. Get your act together. Get your act together.
All right.
Come on, man. This is The Sopranos. Like arguably the best show of all time. It's right up there.
I want to hear more about your thoughts on the finale, because you mentioned it's one of the greatest finales of all time. It was highly controversial, which is kind of a theme in your two favorite picks. The Seinfeld finale wasn't universally loved either. Talk about, is The Sopranos finale a satisfying finale for you?
Amendment, if I said it was the best finale of all time. It's not. In fact, What Is In My Forever Show is the best finale of all time, and we'll get to that. But the Sopranos, I don't think was like the finale that was the end all be all. But I will say, much like Seinfeld, much like The Sopranos, which were television phenomena, it's very hard to end a show like that. It's very impossible because people don't want it to end. And when you know that you're getting that last mark, no matter what you've seen, you know, even if you put a perfect button on it, it ruins it. Like, because Seinfeld was never a perfect button, and Sopranos was dark all throughout. It was sympathizing with a serial killer. And that in and of itself can't be a perfect thing. I mean, that's literally what it is. And if we break down the plot line. So point being, I don't think that you could ever create a perfect finale for shows like that. It's an impossible task. The Sopranos finale in Fading to Black, I actually think is pretty genius. And it's pretty genius because it never answers its own question and makes everyone have a different interpretation, and everyone still talks about it to this day. And it's one of the most annoying things that any like director or writer or executive producer has ever done to an audience. And I love that. Like, I hate it, but I also think the fact that it's so controversial 20 years later, the Fade to Black, where Don't Stop Believin' by Journey was like number one on the tracks for a year after that. And still I can't hear that song and not think of the finale. And the finale, the final scene, happens at this place, Holston's, that I grew up going to. And it's like 5 blocks down from the street for me. So it's all very hometowny for me. I grew up very, very similar kind of way. So it touches that nostalgia that I loved.
You know what the finale, the talk about the finale and the terms that you're using reminds me of, which is also something that feels very Seinfeld-y. So I've been watching Pretend It's a City on Netflix.
Fran is me is Fran.
Fran, you are Fran and Fran is you. And it reminds me of like when Fran is talking about books, right? And she's like, the worst thing you could do is I'm reading a book and I put it down and I forget that I was reading it, right? If I hate a book, I'd much rather hate a book than forget that I was reading it. Because if you hate it, it elicits that response. It's going to elicit discussion. It's going to elicit feelings. Like, you know, a lot of shows that go out with, you know, a whimper or don't have a finale that sticks with you, good or bad, are going to be forgettable.
Opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference. It's not, I hate you and I'm thinking about you. It's, I never think about you at all. And that's my criteria for the TV. If I never think about it, then it's not worth mentioning. And I love Fran Lebowitz in that so much. Like, she is the perfect human in that.
Yeah, if you're looking for another good recent watch, you could watch it in a day.
Yeah.
Pretend It's a City on Netflix.
Absolutely.
I have watched.
Yeah. I love my favorite part in it is just as a tangent when she's like, you know, everyone always tells me that New York City is so expensive they can't live here. And yet 8 million people do it every single day with different jobs. Yeah. Like, yet.
And yet
we're all here living. No one's living in mansions. Like, we're all here living poor, but we all seem to be doing it. I don't know how.
Yeah. My favorite is what I've said for years, which is, I can't believe there are not thousands of near fatal injuries of bikers in New York every single day.
100%.
Can't believe it.
I can't believe it either. That's why I won't ride a bike in Manhattan. I'll do it in Brooklyn, not in Manhattan.
I'm scared to do it anyway.
Yeah. And you should be, because it's terrifying.
All right, Darren, we've uncovered your best and your favorite picks. Moving on to maybe the one of the trickier categories, your forever shows. What are the two shows that you're going to watch on a loop forever in the afterlife?
The show that I'm going to say first to you guys is the show that I think has the best finale of all time. Hands down, if I want a good cry, I still watch the last 9 minutes of this finale on YouTube. That is 6 Feet Under, another HBO show. I'm a big HBO fan, as you can tell. But sure. 6 Feet Under was, I remember watching the first opening scene with my mother. I remember exactly where I was. I'm thinking like, show about death? Like, how could this be interesting? Being completely captivated by it. Honestly, it was one of those shows that originally, before Pee-wee's Playhouse, I had put in my best category, because I think if you haven't seen it, you know, they have someone die every single episode, and they kind of show, you know, it's a funeral home, and they're working on that body, and you know, the weaving and the woving of different relationships. They have an openly gay man on the show that was sort of my first foray into this being like this struggling gay character without it being really a plot line. Like, it was a plot line to some extent, but it wasn't an LGBTQ show about gay things. It just, he happened to be gay and him dealing with that in this small town. And I liked that. I loved all the characters. It's perfectly dark for me. I think that it just goes to show the beauty and the preciousness of life while also showing how much we really don't matter in the grand scheme of things. And it also shows that something around death can actually bring a lot of positivity. And it is one of my favorite shows of all time. I could watch that forever.
The finale is amazing.
Thank you. See ya, breathe me. Get out of here. Tears, Brandy. Tears.
It's one of those songs that I can't really hear without feeling emotional. And the thing is, I didn't watch 6 Feet Under the whole way through. I probably caught per season 2 to 3 episodes. So like, I was versed enough to know who everybody was and kind of what was going on. But like, I didn't have like a huge through line, but I did watch the finale because one of my friends was like, oh my God, you have to watch this. We're watching it right now.
Yep. Yep.
That's actually a question I had. So this is another one that I haven't seen. I apologize, but I'm curious because hearing people talk about it, it does seem like it was an interesting hybrid of an arc kind of serialized, but also a quote unquote, you know, case of the week, right? Like Brandy, you mentioned you could watch 3 or 4 episodes a season and still follow along. Were there serialized elements that would make it like a good binge? I mean, you picked it as your forever show, so you must think that, but does it feel serialized?
It's one of those shows that I feel like I learn something every time I watch it. It's like the movie American Beauty. I just feel like I kind of get a different takeaway every time I see it. I remember things that I didn't think I remembered. I wouldn't, and Brandy will probably might disagree with me, I wouldn't say that watching 3 episodes a season, like I could pick up on it. Like, yes, it's still interesting, but there's so many subtleties to it and the relationships of the family. And, you know, this isn't a big spoiler alert because it happens literally in the first episode, but the father dies. And so in the first episode, you're like, the father dies, like the owner of business, like, oh my God, like what's going to happen here? And just the mother's role in it and everyone's different generational play. I think it's totally like you got to binge from start to finish. It is. Mm-hmm. And Brandy, hopefully you'll agree with me. It's worth the finale. Like the talk about it.
It's worth it. Like,
yeah. Talk about a show wrapping perfectly. I couldn't have thought a better ending at all. Right, Brandy? Like it's beautiful.
Completely agreed. And I do think that it would like, this is a show that I would go back to watch all the way through. Cause like, and you're right in that, like I knew who all the characters were from watching 2 or 3 episodes a season. You know what I mean? But like, don't get the feel of like what this person's going through. That I feel like the finale having the effect on me that it did, and I hadn't seen the whole thing. I can only imagine the effect that it's going to have after I've gone through everything.
Yeah. Genuine weep. Like, and you invest more in the characters, obviously. And so I think to your point, you can still think it's a beautiful finale because you understand the whole point of the show really. But when you invest in these characters and, you know, it's like 6 seasons, I think. So watching it forever, you know, by the time you finish it, you go back to the first one, like there's enough episodes where there's space enough that you can fully enjoy it again. But the finale, Dan, that's a must. Like, it's like Homeland season 1 is the greatest first season of any like scripted show, in my opinion. Like, this is the best finale, in my opinion. You're not going to get something better than this.
I've heard that often. And, you know, we've had a solid number of these conversations now, and it's not the first time 6 Feet Under has come up. Never in Forever, which I'm intrigued by. I'm glad you mentioned how many seasons, because that always comes into play.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be tough to put any show that's fewer than, you know, maybe 3-4 seasons into your forever show, unless they're like really long network sort of seasons. But yeah, it gets a lot of love, and it's always the first thing that is always mentioned is the finale. Like, perfect finale, best finale ever. Often of your list so far, this is probably the one that I would be most eager to check out, even more than Sopranos. And I know maybe some people disagree with that, but I feel like I know enough about the Sopranos just from the general conversation and just being a person alive who enjoys television. Whereas still 6 Feet Under, like, I know it's a great finale. I know generally what it's about, but I don't know the specifics.
It's under the radar a little bit. Yeah, it's under the radar. It's never everyone's like favorite show, but people really appreciate it or have heard of it. But yeah, it's not one of those like, oh yeah, everyone's seen. It's not like the Breaking Bads of it all, you know, where it's like at this point, it's still a little underground. So I highly recommend for sure.
Yeah. And featuring people that I love, you know, Peter Krause who went on to do Parenthood, which I love.
Michael C. Hall,
future Dexter, really just playing in the murder death space for a large stretch of his career. But yeah, I think I'm going to have to check out 6 Feet Under.
You should. I highly recommend.
Okay, so you're going to be watching 6 Feet Under on a loop forever. What are you pairing it with? What is your second forever show? And Darren, can I just say, before you reveal this,
yes,
if you don't say the show that I'm thinking of, I think I could speak for Brandon and I both, will seriously regret having asked you on this podcast.
What show do you think I'm going to say? Because this...
Please reveal your choice. And if it's not what I think, we're going to have a prolonged conversation after your criteria.
This show... oh, no. This show is my favorite show on television whenever it's on. It is got literally infinite seasons. So I know I'd be fine in purgatory or wherever I'm going after this in heaven. It's currently... it literally probably has maybe a season and a half per year, two seasons. It's my only reality show that has made it into the top six. I'm going with MTV's The Challenge on this one.
Yes. She did not disappoint.
Yes. This one had to be in it. It just, not only has it gotten infinitely better since when it started, infinitely better from when it started.
Yes.
But it is... certainly in quarantine has become this like fifth major sport. That was sort of how it was advertised. It gets better every year. We could argue that the season that's currently on right now in the beginning of 2020, I think they need to show a little bit more drama, less of the actual competition, because the drama is very, very fun. But they keep bringing in new people. It keeps getting new. The twists and turns keep throwing me. We're on like season 36. I'm here for it. So Challenge is definitely in a forever show. Are you guys both fans of it?
Both fans.
Fucking love it. Are you
kidding?
It's
the best fucking show. It's the best fucking show.
It's the best show.
My bachelor, Moses and I had a combined bachelorette party. It was Challenge themed. We rented a house in the Catskills. We invited, there were 24 of us, plus our friend Sean, who served as our producer and cameraman. We split into three teams. And we got it done.
Oh,
I cut a trailer for it.
I watched that trailer. It was good.
See it. Like,
yeah, I'll send it to you.
Fantastic. It is fantastic. And you know, they keep bringing in new people. And every year I'm like, what could it be this year? Is it going to be another like X's? Is it going to be another invasion or, you know, vendettas
Dirty
or something?
30.
Wait. And then every year they have these like weird names like Inferno and whatever. And they brought in War of the Worlds, where now we're bringing in outside reality stars. Now they're bringing in Big Brother. Big Brother, by the way, was a reality show that made my list in terms of reality. So it was up there. But the Challenge kind of has a little bit of that Big Brother aspect to it.
Yeah. I think that's the thing with the Challenge is it has the best parts of all the best reality shows. It has the absolute psychotic / sociopathic / just, you know, bonkers casting.
Yep.
It has everyone living in a house.
It has the romance of like exes and people you hooked up with, you know, and then you got to team up with them and then you got to work with them. Yeah. And so it's just like,
but it's not one-offs because people come back in future seasons and renew past romances or hatreds or what have you. And then add on top of that, the competition layer, right? Like this is a game show for sometimes, you know, upwards of $1 million. And to your point, like it's become high, high level competition. I actually listened to the official Challenge podcast and they have on like showrunners and producers and casting producers. And it's really, you know, as someone who works in the industry, it's really revealing. Cause I've always wondered like, you know, this is one of the shows that made me want to work in reality TV. I'm like, how do they think of this stuff? How do they put these things together? How do they figure out that these people are going to do all these things if they set up this sort of thing? And I was basically asking, how do they produce this shit? Right. And now that's what we do. And it's, I think consistently they've only, to your point, like can keep reinventing themselves. They've gotten more and more high concepts. They leaned on the network assets, starting with Are You the One, mm-hmm. and bringing in people from there first. And then
another,
you know,
show I love,
expanding to the, you know, other MTV shows. And now it's even bigger with Big Brother and yeah. Beastmaster and all these other things, but they never miss. They always cast an excellent group.
I mean, I have now just come to terms with the fact that I just have to trust them.
Right.
Cause like, I was so overwhelmed. I was like, oh, you're bringing, Are You the One? Like, get out of here. Oh my God. You're bringing in these Brits. Get out of here. It's like,
and they always surprise you. And then you're like, I'm rooting for this person. And I don't know why.
This is great. This is great.
It's fantastic. And it just, you know, it creates, like, people do this as they're living. Like, you train for it all year. Like Johnny Bananas, mm-hmm. who's, you know, arguably the best challenge player of all time. Like Bananas, like, we don't even know his whole real name. Like, he's just known as Bananas.
Yeah. What's his last name?
Like, I beats me. I would fail on this final Jeopardy question. Just bringing it back to my best. Like, I would fail on this. And that's sort of the point where it's become this thing where even for me, I'm like, could I do this? Like, I think that would be really fun, but like, could I skydive, eat a scorpion, and then run 8 miles and drink a glass of milk? Like, I actually don't know. And watching these people, especially, you know, for the women, because I'm sizing myself up with them. I'm like, would I beat Tori? Like, could I, you know, take Cam? Yeah. The answer is yes and no. I could not take Cam at all. Kill a Cam for a reason. But when you match them up, I'm like, oh, I'd be good at this. There's so much of it that has nothing to do with muscle, and so much of it has to do with mental, and then just perfect timing and luck. And sometimes you can win an entire challenge without ever seeing an elimination. And then sometimes, like now, you have to go into elimination, and just, it has every element of every reality show ever. And the stakes have only gotten higher because they only started doing $1 million. What, 5 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, and they used to have to split it.
I think it started
into
with
teams.
Dirty 30, right?
Maybe Dirty 30, but it was a team.
Was it when
group,
Johnny stole the money from Sarah?
That was when he got $275,000 from doing that, okay. I believe. And then he had the curse. Remember, he couldn't win a challenge up until last year when he won the finale. Mm-hmm. He was like doomed. And that still, that moment goes down in my mind as one of the greatest reality moments for me of all time, where I sat there and I was like, oh my,
like,
God.
My God.
I lost it. Like, I know.
So Bananas, are you going to split the winnings with Sarah, or are you going to take the whole entire $275,000 yourself?
I have learned from the best in these games.
Hate weighs heavy on the heart.
It's Johnny and Judas. That's what we're going to refer to this team as, okay?
I put money above our friendship.
Take this knife out of my back.
We're going to Argentina!
I told you we could be friends.
There's no way that I would have made it to a final and won a final without Sarah as my partner.
It's very rare in life that you have certain moments that can literally change the course of your life. I don't know how many I got left in me of these. Sarah was an amazing partner. I could not have done it without her. But I need to look after myself and invest in my future. So I'm gonna go ahead and take the money and run, teacher.
All right, Bananas. Well, you just secured your spot as the one person that has made the most money on any challenge in history. And Sarah, I'm really sorry, but this means that you get nothing. I'm sorry.
But when Johnny stole it from Sarah, I was like, oh my, like, I actually can't believe someone was willing to, I hated it.
And Sarah hasn't been back.
And she's been one of the best ones. And I would love Laurel to come back. Laurel's a great competitor.
Darren, this leads me into a follow-up question, because I don't know the next time someone's going to come on here and choose the challenge in any category. So I feel like we got to get it while we got it. Yeah. Who are some of your favorite cast members, or a version of that question? If you were in the house, whose game would you kind of emulate? What kind of strategy would you take? And use this season for an example, which is by all accounts one of the best format twists. And this one, you can, it's a couples, a duo season where there's guy girl pairings, but you can swap up partners at any given time if you win an elimination challenge. So kind of how would you play it this season if you were on it?
I think Cam is actually one of the best players of all time. And I think that I severely underrated her when she first came in because she was an outsider. And it's really hard. You know, you want it. Like, I'm always for the vets.
Yeah.
Like, you just want to have those characters. Like, there's as much as you might have hate Wes, like, I still want Wes to go farther than Wes has gone because they're all targeting it. I hate when they target the vets. It's very annoying to me because that's kind of the thread that keeps it going throughout the whole show. You know, now when it's like rookies right. get out, I'm like, I don't have stake in the game. I really think Cam has a great game. Personally, I just think she's very smart about it, very strategic. I thought that way. I love Jay as a rookie too. I thought he was just a very nice guy. I don't think he had a good strategy. CT is always a guy I'm going to root for and love because I think that he is proven himself time and time again. He takes on this dad role. I love him being with Big T this season. Like, it kind of fits.
And I will say, and that's the sort of thing where this is a forever pick makes a whole ton of sense, because talk about a character evolution to be able to watch that unfold, that CT.
You know, remember Demi,
a lot of these people,
Demi died from, Demi was her name, right? Died from cancer. And that was arguably like the love of a DM. That was arguably the love of his life, you know? And like, he talks about that and like, he's come back in memory where we thought he was kind of out of retirement. Then he came back and, you know, Zach and Jenna are having a baby now. And like, I don't think they could ever be on a challenge season ever again. And we've seen that relationship kind of combust, you know, and like,
Zach will. Jenna won't, but maybe Zach will.
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, that's
it. Zach, after they have like four kids, Zach's like,
I
got to
earn money.
Throw me back on a season.
Yeah, right.
We've already decided that like he's going to be mad at her when they have a girl and blame her and gaslight her.
Or dump her. Either way, like it's one of three. It's so true though. And it's really tough to watch those moments, but I like those moments because you're also showing what pressure these couples are really under as it's going down. And, you know, I always think Johnny Bananas plays a great game, but I just think now with the vets, when they outnumber the rookies to the vets, it's like, you can't go, like, you being a vet is now a bad thing. It is now looked down upon. So while I would choose strategy with one of the vets, it's like, you know, I don't know, Leroy, I love, and Darrell always plays a great game because Darrell is never in the drama. You barely remember Darrell being in the season. Darrell has been on the show for like 25 years and he's won four or five times. Like, he's actually right up there with Bananas, but no one ever talks about him because he's like, he sneaks.
He's got a great game. Absolutely great game.
Great game.
Brandy, you were telling me about, and I think talking about the lack of vets, Darren, I don't know if you know about this, but it's a reason to get excited about the next season. Brandy, weren't you telling me about this?
Oh, yes. Oh my God. They're bringing back the OGs.
Yeah, it's
the OGs.
It's the OG season, which like I'm excited I'm here for about, that, but though. Also like, I don't know how they're going to, like, what kind of challenges are, what are they going to do?
They're going to be lift up this bag of groceries and put it somewhere.
So like, what are some names? Who's coming back?
Mark.
Yeah, Mark.
I think Mark is coming back. The internet says that they are. Oh, here we go. Darrell. Oh my God. Big Easy.
Big Easy. So
Big Easy.
Big Easy. These are the OGs. I'm already so happy.
This is OG.
Alton,
OG.
Cyrus. Alton. Oh my God. Tech. From Tech. Rural Hawaii.
Wait, didn't you say Ruthie's coming back too?
Yeah, hold on. Let me get to the women. Okay. It's Anissa. Like, guys, can Anissa work out? Come on. What are you doing?
I know.
Kellyanne, Ruthie, which is yikes. Jemay, Trishelle.
Oh, yes. Vegas is one of my favorite real world seasons. We're going back to like real world road rules days. Yeah. I miss that.
Oh, geez.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Like back
man.
When, like, I don't, there's going to be, it's going to be all pre Are You the One era. It's going to be all like first era.
Yeah. It's all, it's saying where everybody is from. It's all, everybody's either from a real world season, they're from a road rule season, or they're from Fresh Meat.
I was going to say Fresh Meat's probably the one exception. Because I did two of those and that was, they were so early on, like they might as well be.
Guys, Alton is 41. These people are going to be like huffing and puffing up that. And listen, my girlfriend's 42. She can work out, but like, can they really be running 20 miles and staying up overnight, standing up? Like, I don't know. This is, this is hard.
You know what though? I really don't think they're going to like tame it down. Like, you know, TJ is going to come out and be like, you guys haven't been here in a while. A lot's changed. just so you know, if you want to run my finals, right, you have to get through the most intense, epic gauntlet of challenges we've ever, like, they're not going to let up the gas now at this point. They're just going to injure a bunch of people in their 40s.
Although I hate when the finale like ends on like a like moment where you're like, I could have done this. Like when Ashley won the $1 million and she took it away from Hunter, the last step of the of that final like finale was them like walking over glass, like with like fire around them. I was like, really? This is it? Like, and all of them did it in 2 seconds. I was like, this isn't even that difficult. Like, it's one thing to be like hands and knees, but like just walking across glass, like, it's lame.
Yeah.
There was also the final where I want to say, did Car Maria win? It was like Car Maria and Kyle were at the end, and like Johnny Bananas, like they had to like, he had to ask some questions or something. It was like that race,
maze like 3 seasons ago, the last time basically Kara had won. It was weird. I just don't like when they doesn't end on a bang.
Yeah, like until very recently, like they had this weird rut of like the formatting was good and they were giving us like good themes and good twists, but the finales felt like 3 regular challenges stacked together. They didn't feel like finales.
Yeah.
No one was swimming in a freaking ocean. No one was trekking a mountain. No one was jumping out of planes. No one was doing any of the cool shit that should happen during these challenges. If you go to these locations, use them, you know, like
I need people tapping out.
I need people tapping out.
If no one's tapping out, if everyone finishes unsuccessful mm-hmm. finale.
Yeah. I agree. Like, you know, even when Rogan like tapped out, you know, the first challenge on the first day is like a big buff guy. I was like, that's what I need to see. Paulie tapped out in the middle of the jungle. I was like, yeah, exhaust yourself. That's what I want to see as a fan. That is why the challenge is in my forever show.
I love it. Wow.
Oh, well, yes.
I can safely say this is an incredible list
that
I don't think will ever be repeated.
You don't think Jeopardy and Pee-wee are
No. To recap, this is incredible. To recap, Jeopardy and Pee-wee's Playhouse are the best shows that Darren Karp has ever seen. Seinfeld and The Sopranos are her favorite shows of all time. And Darren, you would watch 6 Feet Under and crowd favorite The Challenge forever. I love this list. Brandy, what of these six, what's the most interesting pick to you?
I'm definitely going with Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Fair.
I love it. Like, it's a show I haven't thought about in a while, mostly because, like, I was afraid of it when I was younger. But, like, I love you talking about the effect that it's had on children's entertainment and how it's unparalleled, really. There hasn't been another Pee-wee Herman. And you don't hear that pitch a lot. You know what I mean? Like, well, you know, it's like Pee-wee's Playhouse meets this. Like, you don't, it's in a class of its own.
Yeah.
It really is. I actually sold a show to the late Quibi, and it had, and Dan kind of knows about the show. I can't say it now because it might air other places, but it was very Pee-wee Herman inspired, very Pee-wee Herman inspired. And that kind of brought it back into my ether, and it's just a great show. So if your kids watch it though, Brandy, let me know what they think.
I will.
Yeah.
Dan, which one stands out for you?
Two things. One, it's The Challenge. I'm so happy we got to have that conversation. I was anticipating it. I wasn't sure it was a sure thing, but it is.
Had to make it.
We love that show. So I love talking about that always. And I'm gonna check out 6 Feet Under. This is just the...
It's time.
It's time.
It's time. It's ready. Time. I've had one too many conversations about the perfect finale that like I can't not experience this. So I need to go on that journey. And I think I'm going
to. You have to text me or call me as soon as you watch that finale. Like, I need to know your response and be like, was it worth the hype? Because now, you know, like when I watched.
Call her through the tears while you're still crying.
Yeah, right. Like when I watched Game of Thrones like 3 years too late. So I knew about the Red Wedding and what was going to happen. So when I saw it, I was like, great episode, but not like, oh my God, shocking. But I still think the finale will hold up, even though you've heard about it thousands of times, Dan.
I'll tell you what, I'm actually glad that I've waited, because if I had watched this when it was like on, or when more people were like, when it was in the ether, you know, what, a decade ago? I don't know about you guys, but like in my mid-30s, I cry at television so much more frequently. And I love it. It's a great release. So like, I'm looking forward to it. Bring it on.
It's a good cry. It's a good cry. You guys got to have me back on in 6 months. I'll have an entirely different list.
Well, before we sign off, we have 3 lightning round questions.
Okay.
And so with these, it's the opposite of the criteria. So don't overthink it. Just answer with the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay.
Okay.
Ready?
Yep.
All right. What is a book or a movie that should be adapted into a TV series?
I just read an amazing book, top of my mind, Khashoggi Bane. It's actually kind of a memoir, but it is fiction, but it really is based on his life. The guy's name is Douglas Stewart, I believe it is. And growing up in Glasgow as a homosexual boy with an alcoholic mother, dark, should be a drama. Very good. Very empowering. I think it would make a great TV show.
All right. Awesome. What is a canceled show that's not on your criteria that you would revive if you could?
Freaks and Geeks, I think. I would love to revive that. That only had one season. You know, that was just a great show. I would still rewatch it. It's too short to ever be on a criteria of rewatching it over and over. But what a great show about awkward high school kids that were like awesome. And I totally related to.
One of the best.
What's a recent series that you've been obsessed with that people should check out?
Oh my God, I have so many that I'm obsessed with. Lady in the Dale on HBO is fantastic.
Oh, I've been thinking about checking that out. Okay.
You think it's about one thing and it's really about something else. I'll leave it there.
Okay.
I highly recommend.
Last question. Oh, I just saw I was supposed to pick three. Sorry, Dale.
It's okay.
I was like, wow, there's so many more questions.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so last one, I want to do it. What was your go-to cable channel growing up?
My go-to cable channel growing up was probably MTV or Nickelodeon. Definitely a Nickelodeon kid. Certainly watched a lot of that, but MTV, like Spring Break, TRL, Of a Time, that was where we saw music videos. It was cool. Definitely those two for sure.
All right, guys. With that, like, it's a wrap on this episode of TV BFF.
Woo!
So thank you so much to our guest, Darren Karp.
My pleasure.
Darren, where can we find you?
You can find me on all social media at Karp8Darren. You can follow my podcast, Scissoring Isn't a Thing and Shaken and Disturbed, wherever you get a podcast. You can subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/shaken and disturbed. And of course, you can check me on People TV's Reality Check Monday through Thursday at 4:30 p.m. at peopletv.com.
Awesome. All right. So everybody, please rate, review, and subscribe and check us out on Instagram. We're at TVBFF Podcast, or you can email us at TVBFFpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, please reach out. We would love to hear from all of you and send us your six. We want to know what your top six shows of all time are and where they fall on your own personal BFF criteria. So send us your picks and we'll share our favorites on the podcast. And until next time, bye, friends.
Bye, friends. Bye.